You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us. Welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner, Dave Tindall and Mike Grenham ready and set for another big week in the world of golf. We've got the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open and the AT&T Byron Nelson on the agenda this week. And first of all, a warm welcome to the man who's sitting alongside me here in the studio, Dave Tindall. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, Dave.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Looking forward to this week. I like it when the European Tour kind of gets to these shores.
It's good when the European Tour's played in Europe, I always find.
Yeah, it feels like it's what it says on the tin, isn't it?
And Mike Grenham joining us on the line this afternoon. Warm welcome, Mike.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm in good form, ready for this week's good event. Hoping to do better than last week when my picks all missed the cut at Sawgrass, which was very, very dispiriting. But well done to Dave, who picked Francesco Molinari for a top 10, didn't he?
Big winner for you, Dave. 12-1 he was last week. Quite confident that he'd get that top 10 spot, and he played well all week.
Yeah, it somehow doesn't feel quite as kind of pleasing to pick someone to come top 10, even if they were 12-1. But I suppose it's the same as a 30-1 winner, isn't it, in some ways? Like a point each way at 30s is the same as three points at 12. But yeah, it was nice to get that because he played well all week. I was just hoping he wouldn't throw it away at the end because I think he deserved where he finished. He finished seventh. And again, if he finished fifth, I might have been thinking, oh, if only I'd done him each way. So that was almost the perfect result, wasn't it, to finish seventh.
Jason Day winning the Players' Championship last week, Mike. A lot of comparisons now being made with Tiger Woods. And at the moment, he's producing Tiger numbers.
He is, Dave, isn't he? And he just, I mean, I tweeted about it last week, and he's just reminiscent of the way that he has a double bogey or something, and he bounces back with a birdie, or he gets into trouble, and then he ends up birdie doing something spectacular. He just has a little bit of that about him at the moment. Of course, he's got nowhere near Tiger's CV yet, has he? But some of his play when he's at his best has Tiger features, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah. And Kevin Chappell's quote was good after the event because before this season, Jason Day's form in Florida had been pretty appalling. And he just said, I thought this was the state that Jason Day didn't win in. And he's now won twice in Florida. And that's 7 in 17 starts on tour, which is pretty special, isn't it, at the moment, Mike? And he definitely has those. Maybe I'm revising internally. I had the idea of the top three and in what order they were in. But maybe that's starting to need a little bit of revision now, Mike.
Oh, yeah, at the moment, judged on such a big event, Sawgrass, isn't it? He's got to be judged the number one player in the world based on 7 wins in 17 events. That is Tiger-type success, isn't it? So we all know that Jordan and Rory can come back and pinch that off him, but at the moment, he's doing it. And why did it take so long for him to win? You know, why? What was going on? You know, He had only one win in however many events it was. And look how prolific he is now. It's quite an incentive, you would think, to other players who are maybe know they've got the talent but haven't quite got there yet.
Yeah, and it's interesting how much he's referencing Tiger Woods in whenever he talks about his performances recently, Dave. He's saying how his conversations with Tiger Woods has maybe helped instill a little bit of belief in him. There's definitely a certain sort of mutual respect there.
Yeah, definitely. And what Tiger was brilliant at was closing, wasn't he? Tiger won all his 14 majors from the front. And now Day's going wire to wire. I saw some stat where I think no player since 1970 had gone wire to wire 3 times in a year. And Day's just done that, you know.
Yeah.
He's setting out his stall and holding on. Brilliant.
He did get a little bit of an advantage, which he brilliantly took full advantage of. By having that early start. I think that did help, didn't it, on Thursday? And not only did he get the good tee time, but my God, he started. Didn't he start with 3 birdies? And that 9-under round pretty much knocked a lot of other players out of the tournament, didn't it? But credit to him, he took advantage. And Yeah, he's breaking records at the moment.
Let's get stuck into this week then, chaps. Two good events to have a look at, and we'll start with the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. And Rory McIlroy hosting this event, hosted by the Rory Foundation. It is definitely one of the more eagerly awaited events on the European Tour. And after all those European events in far-flung corners of the globe, it's good to have an event on home soil, and this tournament is the beginning of a good stretch of golf on the tour. And McIlroy heads the market here at 7-2 this week. Danny Willett is 16-1, Shane Lowry 20-1, Graham McDowell in the betting at 25-1, Joost Luiten 25-1, Lee Westwood 25-1, Russell Knox 25-1, and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And the K Club is the host course for this year's event and is most well known as hosting the 2006 Ryder Cup, when Ian Woosnam led his European team to a comprehensive 18.5, 9.5 win. And that's one for the American listeners out there, Dave, just to remind them of that.
Yeah.
That's the this course synonymous with that, obviously, with that Ryder Cup in 2006.
Yeah, and one of the memorable moments when Tiger hit his opening tee shot into the River Liffey, which kind of set the tone, didn't it, for American kind of calamity week. I went that week, and one of the main memories as well was the terrible weather. It was shocking, absolutely like a mud bath. It really was, but they did great to get the course in such good condition. But Woozy just basically, I think he just wrote his parents on the back of a sort of beer mat or something. It just he didn't overcomplicate, which deserves some credit, because sometimes captains like to think, oh, let's try and be clever, but Woozy just sort of went, yeah, them two like each other, they're from the same country, and it worked brilliant, didn't it?
I was also there that year, Dave, and ended up in the American team party, but I don't like to mention
it. I'll go on once more for the listeners. Who was that fella you were chatting with?
So many times.
He used to be good at golf, that guy, didn't he, yeah, that you were talking with in the team room, Mike?
Tiger, yeah, he used to be decent enough.
He's gone downhill recently.
All I'll say, Ronan Keating's a lovely singer as well. He got up and that is the truth.
We do have a little bit of course form to go on here as well, Mike, because this course was used for the European Open on the tour between 1995 and 2003, and was used again in 2005. A par 72 measuring 7,350 yards. And there are three par fives on the back nine, so we should have some excitement late on in the piece on Sunday as well here.
Yeah, it's a great course. It'd be interesting to see how it plays, though, because obviously all of that tournament plays quite a while ago, and everything you hear is that the trees have grown, matured quite a lot. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays, but Dave's right, the weather wasn't great when the Ryder Cup was there, but you could still tell it was a really good course and a great kind of complex, the whole K Club. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays.
Yeah, from what I've read, Mike, I think scoring's going to be pretty decent this week as well. I know the trees have matured, as you mentioned, but the rough's reportedly down. So I think we're going to see some good scoring at the K Club this week as well.
Don't you think the weather's going to be a factor, though, guys? There are reports of it being quite wet and potentially windy as well. So, and Ireland can be like that, obviously. So that could play a part. That would definitely affect the scoring if the conditions were bad, I guess. But otherwise, yeah, you're right. The rough's meant to be very low, isn't it? So probably pretty fair off the tee, I guess.
How many selections have you got this week, Dave?
I've got one.
Mike?
I haven't got any pre-tournament selections, Dave. I fancy a few, which I'm happy to talk about. In fact, my long list was too long, and the prices just didn't quite tempt me in. But I really like this event, and I'll definitely be having a bet in running on it. So over to you for the tips.
Okay, Dave, you can lead off. I've just got one selection. Sorry, I've got a couple of picks in this event, so I'll lead off here.
You go.
I have got two in this event. I'm going to start with Matthew Fitzpatrick as my number one selection at 40-1, and play him a point each way. I think he'll enjoy conditions this week. I reckon it might be quite similar to what he encountered at Woburn, given that even though this track looks slightly less technical, it was his arrow straight driving that allowed him to succeed at Woburn, and I get the feeling on another tree-lined golf course he'll quite enjoy this. That British Masters win was superb, performance at the Masters showed how talented he is as well when he finished tied for seventh, further highlighted his ability. And I can kind of forgive that miscut at Harbortown, given it came on the back of that Masters performance. And last week at the Players, opened with a 69, first look at the golf course, didn't quite make the cut. But he's been 29th and 8th in his two starts at the Irish Open. And when you consider that Englishmen have won four of the last eight Irish Open championships, it looks pretty wise to have a glance definitely at those in Northern Europe, certainly, and in Britain in particular, Britain and Ireland. So I think Matthew Fitzpatrick is a good bet this week at 40-1, and I'm going to play him a point each way.
Yeah, I looked at him. I must say, I thought it was a decent price on someone so talented. I suppose I've got someone similar-ish in terms of the way he plays the game. Richie Ramsey for me, 66-1. Again, a very arrow straight hitter. So if the trees have matured, he should, you know, still be able to find fairways, avoid the trees. And he's got a nice record in this event. He was ninth at Killarney in 2010. 16th at Royal Portrush 2012, and then he was the halfway leader actually at Royal County Down last year. I wanted to say County Down last year. Finished 10th in the end after a poor final round, but it's clearly a tournament he likes. You made reference to Northern Europeans. Yeah, if you look down the winners, it's all GB and Ireland, or if not, it's Scandinavians, isn't it?
Yeah.
So as a Scot, brought up in Aberdeen, any wind won't cause him any problems at all, will he? And the last time we saw Ramsey, he was sixth in the Volvo China Open after a nice weekend. So I think lots of trends just coming right for him. I thought that's a good price for a guy with a lot of talent who can win.
Richie Ramsey is Dave's number one selection here. Before 66-1 here with William Hill. Before I mention my second selection, Mike, let's bring you in here. Who would have been your pick here if you were going to have one?
Well, both of the players that you mentioned would very much be on my mind. I like Ramsey. In fact, I think I backed him last year in this event. And I do like Fitzpatrick. I'm slightly worried about their length off the tee, though. Mm. If this is wet and it plays long, maybe you might need longer players. So my strategy might be to just see how it goes and then see whether guys like Thomas Peters are suited by it, yeah?
Yeah, I get you there.
Yeah, I look at Peters if he's going to play along, maybe. And then two players who I really like for Greens in regulation play, Bernd Wiesberger and Joost Lauter, and they were very high on my list as well. But my long list is long, to be fair, but absolutely the guys you've already mentioned were on it. Mm. It's just, that would be my only query about Ramsey and Fitzpatrick. If it's wet, will it play a little bit too long for them? And then that plays into your bomber's hands. So Peters and a number of others, but he's about ready to come back to playing well again, I think. So I've got him on my mind.
Yeah, 50-1 looks a nice price for Peters. I was definitely considering Thomas Peters this week. My second selection, I think this is a massive price here. I'll play him a point each way as well. Again, the length concern. If it does play long, this will definitely hinder this player, but Fabrizio Zanotti, I think, is a huge price here at 125-1. Again, it's kind of sticking with that Woburn theme a little bit, because he's taken a while to get going this year, Zanotti. Look at his finishes on European soil last year. Finished seventh in the Nordea, followed that with a fourth in the KLM, a third in Italy, and second in that British Masters. And last couple of starts on tour, finished 16th in Shenzhen and tied ninth in the China Open. Rounding into form really nicely, definitely worth a go at three figures. And what appeals is the last couple of starts, fifth and second in greens in regulation on those two appearances. And I think that could be a key stat for me this week, greens in reg, because you're going to have to make a lot of birdies. I thought he was massively overpriced, Zanotti, at 125-1. But as Mike mentioned, if it does play along this week, Dave, Zanotti is one of those guys that is going to suffer subsequently.
Yeah, it's a bit of a random factor, isn't it, trying to guess the weather forecast. But it's fair to presume in Ireland it wouldn't be unusual, would it, to get a bit of bad weather. But it's kind of a balance as well between the rain and the wind, isn't it? So, for example, rain probably helps Rory, but wind probably doesn't help him. So it's a bit of a trade-off.
Yeah, I think so. And from all the pre-tournament comments that I've seen, it suggests that strong, long drivers that are accurate as well, Mike, are going to be suited here. Was Rory McIlroy ever a consideration for you at 7-2?
Well, of course, he's always a consideration, isn't he? But not at that price at the moment, because his putting's not probably on fire, is it? And yeah, if it, like Dave just alluded to, if it's windy, that won't help him either. He has the distractions of being the host. He can win anywhere, we know that. But the price probably a little bit short, because there's a lot of unknowns this week, which is why I'm just hanging fire myself. Mm. So yeah, of course, I wouldn't put anyone off Rory, but there are some question marks.
He's suffered in this championship, hasn't he, as well?
Definitely.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? He's missed the last three cuts. I mean, who would have thought that? Yep. He shot an 80 at Royal County Down last time. Probably a course, even though he's probably played it a lot, but probably he felt cramped and a bit restricted. You wouldn't match him up with that course, would you, as his ideal
this looks
place for a win?
Much more suitable, doesn't it?
This is more American style, isn't it? So it should suit him more, but we'll have to see. But like Mike says as well, does all the extra responsibility, you know, the Rory Foundation are sponsoring it, will that just take his eye off it?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Who else was on your mind then, Dave?
Shane Lowry, you have to say. He won this event famously as an amateur, didn't he, in 2009?
Yeah.
It's in his part of Ireland. It's in Southern Ireland, so and he's played well in other Irish Opens as well. Had a really nice start at Sawgrass before folding a bit on the weekend, but I think this week and next week he plays really well, doesn't he, at Wentworth as well, Shane Lowry. I think he might be peaking around now.
20-1 for Shane Lowry. The other guy, Wiesberger, was next on my list, Mike. If I was going to have a third pick, it might have been him.
Yeah, must have a big chance, Dave. As you said, if Greens and Reg are the stats to watch, he's high on both the European and PGA Tours on that stat. So he is definitely on my mind for this event. I like Wiesberger's chances a lot. But just if he's playing long, strangely enough, I always think of him as quite a long player, but he's not quite as long as he appears off the tee. So again, that's one to watch. But yeah, I'm with you here. He's very high on my list.
You know what? He just slightly disappointed me when I backed him in China, Mike, and he opened with that 65. And I was convinced he was going to contend that week, and he played pretty poorly over those last three rounds, which sort of puts me off at 40-1 slightly.
I agreed, Dave. He was probably the nearest to me having a pick, but that exactly what you've just said. And really, there was something similar at Sawgrass, wasn't there, where he looked like he was going to play well and then kind of faded.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a doubt, but I'll be watching him like a hawk.
Just one more I want to mention as well before we get on to Byron Nelson. Alex Noren is 50-1. He's been quite well backed, and I find it easy to see why he has been backed. Top 10s on his last two European Tour starts. Revels in conditions like this as well. Three of his wins have come in tournaments where the ball has been point and shoot, basically, in soft conditions. And I think if he can stay fit, he's got a chance of moving back into the world's top 50 at some point and regaining the privileges that a ranking like that offers. And he's got a decent record in the event as well. So Alex Noren was the other one on my mind. Any others you want to mention just before we move on, Mike? Or are we sorted here?
Martin Kaymer could be potentially coming back to form. There was flashes of that at Sawgrass, I thought. He could be someone interesting. A couple of outsiders, because they're pretty big prices, both about 80-1, maybe Tommy Fleetwood and Lucas Gerrigard. Both of those guys can get it out there. So, I really have a very long list, as I said earlier in this event. So rather than bat them all, I think I'll hang fire and try and work out how the course is playing once it starts.
Let's move on to the AT&T Byron Nelson Championship this week then. And the last few champions of this event have had their problems. Sangmun Bae, the winner in 2013, now serving in the Korean military. Brendan Todd won this in 2014. He's only made three cuts in 19 starts on tour this season. Hasn't made one since early February. Stephen Bowditch, who won it last year, missed five straight cuts, and you'll find him more quickly on the leaderboard if you're scrolling from bottom to top. Stephen Bowditch recently, and it's been something of a curse, Mike, to win this championship. However, Aussies Jason Day and Adam Scott have both won here, and they've subsequently become major champions, which kind of redresses the balance.
Yes, to say the least.
for a long time, wasn't it? This was the only event, stroke play event, Jason Day had won for years and years.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it?
That's right, yes, absolutely, yeah.
And even though those two aren't in the field this week, we do have Jordan Spieth here, and he's 7-1 favourite with William Hill. Dustin Johnson is 8-1, just a point behind him in the betting. Matt Kuchar, 18s. Sergio Garcia, 18-1. Charlie Hoffman is 20s. Charles Schwartzel and Zach Johnson, both 25s. And it's 28-1 and bigger the rest. And we're at TPC Four Seasons again, Dave, this year. And this tournament suffered last year with the weather. Even though they got the tournament done, the 14th hole, which was scheduled to be played as a par 4, was made a par 3 on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And the course played to a par 69. And it's wet again this year, so I think we're going to have not disastrous conditions like last year, but it's going to be wet again.
Yeah, and it's Texas, it's always going to be windy as well. So I've picked a player as my main bet who does a bit of a mudlark, does like bad weather or can perform well in bad weather.
Okay, okay. Mike, what do you see as key factors this week?
Similar again, Dave. I think greens in regulation are quite important in the Byron Nelson, and hitting it quite close to the hole. They're the things I'll be looking at. But you look back at the stats of the last few years, and it is a bit of a mixed bag, to be fair, to be absolutely truthful. You get some long hitters do well here. Brendan Todd's not that at all. He's more of a decent putter. So it's quite a puzzle to some degrees, this event. And again, I haven't got a bet. I think win players, as Dave has just alluded to, obviously that always helps in Texas. But yeah, a tricky puzzle, this one for me. A tricky puzzle. I couldn't come close to having a bet, if I'm being honest, in this.
Dave, have you got a selection?
I've got two.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, you lead off. I've just got the one pick here.
Yeah, I'm going to lead off on Louis Oosthuizen. Mike said before about greens in reg being something to look for here. Well, his recent greens in regulation numbers are superb. He was 8th for GIR at the Players' Championship when 28th, and 10th for greens in regulation at the Masters when 15th. 28th and 15th by themselves aren't outstanding, but the 28th was his second best Players' Championship result. I always like that when they play well at a course
that
they've struggled at previously. Top 15 at the Masters is never a bad thing, is it? I know he's finished runner-up there before, but again, that was one of his better ones. And you go back a little bit previously, he was second in the World Match Play, which was in Texas as well, which I think is a nice link. Seventh at the Valspar, where he was second for greens in reg. He was third for greens in reg at the Cadillac when 14th. And then before that, he hit 93% of greens in reg when he won in Perth in Australia. So he's absolutely dialed in, isn't he, I think, Oosthuizen. In this event, last time he played, at 2014, he was tied 11th. And you think, well, that's pretty good. But if you just drill down a little bit, you'll find that he was the 54-hole leader after a 64. Just didn't work out for him on that final day. But it's clearly a course that he gets on well with. He actually says he loves the course, and it's one of these that come right near the bottom of favourite courses on tour. I know you don't like player quotes, but I'd rather him be saying I love it than I don't know.
Yeah, I think he likes it. He probably likes it so much because I think it suits high ball flight, doesn't it, this course? That from what you've got quotes from Jordan Spieth in previous years, even though he's at a 10s every year,
yes,
he says that the course doesn't suit him because you've not got to work the ball very much, you've just got to hit a high ball flight.
Yeah, which suits Oosthuizen, of course. He grew up, didn't he, in Mossel Bay in South Africa, and he's won and come second in Windy Opens at St Andrews. So any win, you know, bring it on this week. I think 28-1 is a fair price. I think Spieth's not in any sort of form, or not in his normal form. And his record at this event. He's had 5 goes at it, not had a top 15. So that's not very Jordan Spieth-ish, is it? Normally,
no.
He's already had a second by this stage after about 2 years, but he's had 5 goes at it, unusually. I do think Dustin Johnson's got a massive chance, but his price is just a bit there.
Yeah, 8-1, Dustin Johnson. Yeah, I think that's an accurate description, actually, Mike, because Dustin Johnson's got the current form, got the course form, but he's not exactly been prolific, has he, the last couple of years?
No, he hasn't. I mean, he did play quite well at Sawgrass for a couple of rounds there, which is not his favourite at home. But yeah, when you look at 8-1 or wherever he is, yeah, you can leave that at the moment, can't you? Just shows a little bit of the paradox of this event for me, though, because you're saying there that high ball flight works well here. And I think that's right. But then again, it's very windy here as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So That's why I find it a puzzle that just at this stage is one that I can't overcome, because there are different ways to play it. Need a little bit of luck with tee times. And for that reason, 8-1 Dustin Johnson, who hasn't won for a little while, doesn't appeal too much to me.
Yeah, like you said, we're forecast thunderstorms as well, so it could get stop-start, and that means the tee times are more prevalent as well, so it is tricky.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of price, they're the sort of prices Jason Day's been winning at. 8-1 and obviously won 7-17.
Well, there was 12-1 last week.
Yeah, exactly, which proves the point. Yeah, where Dustin Johnson's only won once, I think, since 2013. So that's it's not very good for someone at that price. It's not, you know. I honestly do think he'll finish in the top five, but as a win bet, I don't like it.
I've got the one pick here. I'm going with Brooks Koepka as my selection at 33-1. I really thought he'd have made more of an impact on tour this season than he has. And I'm sure he's been slightly disappointed with the way he's performed as well. I remain convinced, though, that he's one of America's brightest stars and he'll be in that Ryder Cup team come September.
Club switch, maybe?
Yeah, maybe so. He does have to raise his game slightly, doesn't he, now? Having said that, I was still surprised to see 33-1 available in a field that's lacking in a little bit of strength in terms of quality. He was very good in the soft conditions in round one at Sawgrass last week, shooting 66 before faltering in those devilishly difficult conditions on the Saturday. And en route to a 16th place finish in this event last year, he ranked number one in greens in regulation. And statistically, he's doing everything solidly but nothing spectacularly at the moment, even though he ranks 12th in the all-around. I think it's a matter of time before he contends again, Brooks Koepka, and I think this course is perfect for him. So I'm happy to take 33-1 on a golf course that suits his style. So he's my selection this week, 33-1 Koepka.
Jolly good. My second pick this week. Well, we remember Stephen Bowditch. He got married, didn't he, on the 18th green? Get off the course. What are you doing? I thought he was proposed. He actually did get married on the 18th green. I don't know whether he consummated it there afterwards. It was one of those things. Did you?
I didn't see that. I saw the photos of the actual ceremony.
But did you know that before the event?
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't. It was one of those, would it have made a difference? You never know, but it was like one of those ones where you go, oh, if only I'd known that.
That was a complete bolt from the blue, though, wasn't it? Stephen Bowditch winning the tournament.
Yeah. Although he was an Aussie, he has won before, so there was certain a bit of logic to it. But I'm going to kind of go with something similar-ish and go for a guy who's actually a member at the course, lives 3 minutes away, Danny Lee.
Right.
Where you were going to go for him, Dave?
Yeah.
This is a Danny Lee week for DC.
Yeah. Well, I've put him up, I think, a couple of times. And I thought, if I miss him here and he wins, I'll absolutely kick myself. Because he is a member, he's lived in the area since 2007, got his first chance to play on an invite in 2009, and he was still a teenager then. He finished 13th. So that was a great first effort. 3 years later, that was his next time he started. Again, he cracked the top 20 after closing 67, took tied 19th. Missed a cut 2 years ago and a kind of okay-ish tied 34th last year. Four rounds in the sixes, you can't really knock that. But since last year, he's gone on to win for the first time. Had a brilliant back end to 2015. I think he was second, wasn't he, at the Tour Championship. This year, we've seen him finish fourth. In Phoenix, we've seen him right up there in the Masters for two rounds.
Yeah.
Eventually tied 17th, which is another good effort. Another good performance just a couple of weeks ago at Quail Hollow when he was tied 9th in the Wells Fargo. And an okay-ish 35th at Sawgrass, really. That's not too bad. Nothing to worry about there. He was actually tied 11th going into the final round, so he just had a bad final day. Most people had a bad Saturday, didn't they? But he held firm on the Saturday with a 72. So I think that 35th, you know, looks
a lot
worse.
Can upgrade it slightly.
Yeah, I think so. So I think he's in nice form on his local course, 50-1 in what is a pretty thin field, I think. You get past Spieth and Johnson, and then you're kind of into Kuchar.
You're into the second rung slightly.
Yeah, I think so. So I think there's definite scope. If he'd been 40s, even 33s, I wouldn't have been amazed, but And at 50s, more than fair on Danny Lee.
Danny Lee, 50-1 for Mr. Tindall. Mike, who came closest for you? I know you're not having a bet in this event pre-tournament. I'm sure you'll look at it in running. Who came closest?
Yeah, I think another Australian, Mark Leishman, I thought might have been on both of your minds, to be fair. But to be fair, the players that I did like were all a little bit short in the market, I think. So Leishman, 33s, I think he is, maybe a bit short. Jason Duffin, the same price. He loves this place. Could see him playing well, but 33s. Ditto Ryan Palmer, who is a Texan and plays ever so well here. But about 40-1 for how often he wins.
Yeah.
So they're the kind of players I was looking at, guys. And the prizes weren't big enough to tempt me in. They really weren't. So I want to see how it goes in running, see what the weather's like. And I definitely will be looking at this event as well in play, but they weren't quite strong enough for me at the prices. And if I was to mention a couple of outsiders at massive prices, John Hurt and Rob Pampling, another Aussie, they're both pretty big for guys who like the course, but their chances aren't that strong. But they could outperform their odds, let's put it that way.
John Hurt is 150-1. Rod Pampling is 250-1 here with William Hill. Glad you mentioned Ryan Palmer as well, Mike, because he looks very solid. Texan, born and bred, and 12 consecutive cuts made. Finished fourth in the last event in Texas, in the Texas Open. Lost a playoff here in 2011. Made every cut at this event since, with top tens in 2012 and 2015. But three wins in 330 starts on tour.
And nonsense.
Nonsense 2010. Yep. Yeah. So that's
the problem, isn't it? Yeah. At 40-1, that's the problem. Yeah, he was top of my list until I saw 40-1.
You're probably chasing those each way payouts there, aren't you, Mike, at those prices?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you're on equivalent to around about 10-1 a place. That's not very exciting in this field, is it?
No.
One player I think we need to mention, because it's come up on Twitter, hasn't it? Scott Piercy.
Yes, definitely. We were copied in on a tweet by Mark about this when Scott Piercy was asked which event he was going to win for betting purposes. And he said the Byron Nelson Championship, which is this week. You have to take it with a pinch of salt, obviously. But he's got decent recent form and decent course form as well, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be too drawn in by the fact he said that, but if you pretend that's never happened and you just look at him a bit more objectively, yes, as you say, he was fifth here a couple of years ago. He's got some nice recent form. He was a winner, I think it was the Barbasol, or was that the one before, but he was a winner in July, so he's won in the last 12 months, and plays some nice form in Texas as well. Yeah, Scott Piercy, I think we're just a little bit short, maybe at 50s.
Yeah, he has been back steadily over the last day or two.
Yeah, I can see that. But it'd be a funny one, wouldn't it, if he then goes and wins and he's actually told us. But,
and none of us are on. That would be
but
funny.
There you go, yeah.
Okay, let's recap the selections then. We'll start with you, Dave, and your picks in Ireland and the Byron Nelson.
Yeah, so I'll start in Ireland and I will go a point each way. Richie Ramsey at 66-1. Then the 18T Byron Nelson. I'll have a point each way, Danny Lee at 50-1. And a point and a half each way on Louis Oosthuizen at 28-1.
I'm going Matthew Fitzpatrick, point each way at 40-1 in the Irish Open. Point each way Fabrizio Zanotti at 125-1 in Ireland as well. And in the Byron Nelson, 1 point each way, Brooks Koepka at 33-1. Is my pick. Mike, thank you for your company.
Yeah, sorry for no tips, but I will be tweeting in running, because particularly the Irish event, I think I'll definitely be betting there once I've got a bit of a feel for what's going on. And I would also like to mention that the seniors major season starts. Yeah, it's the tradition this week. So not the easiest of the majors to predict, but one I'll definitely be having a good look at. And if I fancy anyone in that, I'll be tweeting there as well.
Bernard Langer, the 4-1 favourite here with William Hill for the region's tradition. Jeff Maggot is 6-1. Tom Lehman, 10-1. Colin Montgomery, 12-1. Kenny Perry is 14s and it's 20s and bigger the remainder. So keep your eye on tweets from Mike throughout the week at M. Grenham. Thank you to Dave Tindall as well, at Dave Tindall Golf, if you want to follow Dave on Twitter. And you can follow myself at D. Kellner. Thank you, folks, for listening to the Golf Podcast this week. Check us out at audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. And you can catch us on iTunes as well. And myself, Dave, and Mike will be back next week. Good luck with your golf bets here with William Hill.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.